Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
All right. So today, as I said, is the day of all days to be excited. Wait a minute, what do you mean? Well, because we keep thinking it's Sunday morning. Well, that's why I keep saying it that way. It is. It is. That's what our mentality is supposed to be. Okay, first, before I get started on the message, just want to say you guys are the best. Everything went pretty well. We had a lot of people come out and help. We went and helped out some people in the community. And you guys were just over the top, making sure that if anybody needed anything, and just asking. So I often tell people, though, that we do a good job when somebody loses somebody and somebody is in mourning. But what we always forget is 4 to 6 months from now. And that's usually when all, because the grief and everything sets in when somebody has a significant loss. And for some people, they lost a lot of things. For some people, it's difficult to handle the loss of a structure. Some people did lose some families. I think there was 5 deaths in the state, which is really kind of a miracle when you see how big the destruction was. But some people don't do very well with big traumatic events like this. So a couple months from now, people that you know that were affected, make sure you're checking in on them. All right, let's make sure that we don't just do the, hey, we brought you a bunch of food, sorry what happened, and then kind of go, oh yeah. So just let's make sure we're reminding each other about that. Okay, so I told you two weeks ago, we were going to be talking about the story with Joshua and going into the place of promise, and we are. I was going to do this last week to kind of get our mindset for the whole week of unleavened bread, get us in the whole Passover mindset. The story in Luke 24, as I was alluding to during communion, that the guys that were on the road to Emmaus, they were complaining because it didn't go the way they thought it was going to go. And then Yeshua shows up. They don't really recognize him. He starts asking them, hey, what's all this? What are you talking about? They're like, what, are you new here? Did you just get in town? What are you talking about? What do you mean you don't know? You know, we thought this guy was going to be the Messiah and he was going to deliver us. And then they go in, they break bread. And yeah, you might want to chuck me down a battery if that thing's already acting up, because, well, I'll be hurt in just a moment. Oh, that was you. Never mind. That was the sound guy. but they went in and they break bread, and then it says, did our hearts not burn within us? How did we not know it was him? So Yeshua was kind of playing a little trick on them, right, because they didn't really recognize him, because maybe they still had a different perspective. What I always thought was funny, especially here in Arkansas, the word Emmaus actually means hot springs. So these two dudes were on their way to hot springs when they were having this conversation, all right? So, again, we're talking about Passover, why it's important, why God said to remember it, how the events of Joshua and the crossing of the Jordan are a foreshadow of this event. And a lot of people miss it. And if you only read, and you can get a lot out of what happened in Joshua just in English when I get to the one verse that we're going to launch from. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Trying to get used to the technological advances here, because I'm using my iPad for the first time, and it went to like an eye chart. Yeah, I don't know what happened there, but I got it back. Okay. All right, so they were a foreshadow. That's what this whole thing was about, was telling us about a greater event. And even if you just read it in English, you can actually get a lot from the story. But in the Hebrew, it's even more powerful. All right. We were having a slight discussion before service. There are some people, and you hear me talk about them in the Messianic community, we call them pan-Babylonians. So they find Babylonian pagan idolatry in virtually everything. And they're quite annoying, really. They really are quite annoying. And you can't, I mean, literally, once you find these people, they get a hold of a spirit, and everything is an idol. Everything was in Babylon. And so you can't even enjoy. You go, hey, what are you doing for Easter Sunday? You pagan, you're going straight to hell. You said Easter. However, we don't use that terminology. Why? Because it's first fruits. That's what it's about. And we want to make sure that we focus on the things that God said, the things that God started, the things that God used. As we said, Billy and I were saying before service, was the vast majority of the world knows what it means when they say Easter. They know that it means the resurrection of the Messiah. They know that. However, we miss stories and we miss the importance of remembering the Passover, remembering it in context, remembering all the times that it hinted at something. And it's just, it's got so many hints, so many foreshadows leading up to Exodus and then after the Exodus of what Yeshua was supposed to do during this. It's more than anything else we are to remember. It's why God said to remember, to remember, to remember, to remember. You know, we joke all the time about, you know, using when people in traditional church go, well, we don't need to do that. It's already fulfilled. And we jokingly say, go tell that to your wife the next time anniversary rolls around. Get over it, woman. We already celebrated this, right? For us, it was almost 30 years ago, okay? I got you a ring, got you a nice dress. We had a good party. We went on a honeymoon. Get over it. Yeah, let me know how that works out for you. I got a spare room if you need it. So this is even more important than that because it is the foreshadow. It is the wedding betrothal. That's what Passover is leading up to, and it's why he said to remember, because remember, it's not done yet. We still, the Passover is not done yet. It's coming again. We're going to celebrate it with him anew in the kingdom. And so I remind you of a couple things, like in Genesis 15. We talk about how Genesis 15, when Abraham asked God, how am I going to know that you were going to give me this son? And God said to go get him a couple of animals. Abraham didn't question him. There's Abram at that time. He didn't question him. He went and got the animals. And God showed him what was going to happen to the son and the descendants from that son. And in 400 years, they were going to be in bondage. They were going to be in slavery, but God was going to deliver. And the rabbis tell us that that was the future date of Passover because it was the fear and trepidation and all of that that Abram had upon him. A lot of people thought it was the slavery itself. And what the rabbis say is, no, he actually saw the night of the Passover. He saw the death of all of the Egyptians is what he saw. And that's why Abram was so tormented. So what happens? They begin to say, hey, this happened on the future days of Passover. Then you go to Genesis 17 and then you have circumcision. Then you go to Genesis 22 and you have the binding of Isaac. And now you not only have the date established from Genesis 15, and now in Genesis 22, he tells you what's going to happen. Because as they were heading towards Mount Moriah, the mountain where the temple was going to be, the mountain where the Lord was going to be crucified. And then they go, hey, on the third day is when he saw the place, right? And I shared the story with you a couple times about that rabbi who was telling me about all these different things about the, can't remember, don't like it when I don't remember words. The word for the place, and he saw the place, the hamakom, thank you. He saw the place. And it says he saw it on the third day. And we sit there and go, okay, well, now go look. Just pull up your little Bible search app and look for all the places third day is mentioned. So you see it there. You see it what's that guy's name? Jacob. when he has the Jacob ladder. All of these different places, it's nonstop throughout the entire Old Testament. So back to Genesis 22. On the third day, they start telling us what? Something special is going to happen on a three-day period, someplace at Mount Moriah, someday in the future. And oh, by the way, I'm getting ready to give my son, my only son, whom I love, right? The whole story, the whole thing's being laid out there. And we talked about how when the angel stopped him and what Abraham saw when he looked into the bush. He was at the place. It was a future prophetic event where he then says, on the mountain of the Lord it shall be seen, meaning it was something future. And it had to do with what? A son that was going to be offered. And guess what the rabbis say? That this event happened, the binding of Isaac, happened on the future date of Passover. So more, he's laying the groundwork of what's supposed to happen on this day. A firstborn, and then we get to the Exodus itself. The firstborn son is killed. It may not be the firstborn of the Jews, but the firstborn son in Egypt was killed. And then God says to remember this event. Over and over, remember, 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 remember. So much so that if you have any animal, the firstborn animal that is mine. The firstborn male is mine. Every time you have a firstborn son, he's consecrated. Every time something new, the first fruits, everything. Why? I want you to remember what I did in Egypt. This is very important, not just so you can go, hey, look, God delivered us once. Let's remember that. Yes, from the aspect of what I was saying is that you can be delivered and you can be set free, but he's doing something even greater. He's painting a picture so that they remember, so that they go, hey, for the next 1,200 years, I want you to remember this. They didn't know the time frame because it was coming to something greater. If we didn't stop it, okay, if we stop doing it, then guess what we're going to miss? The next aspect of it. If we don't celebrate all of the other feasts, we're going to miss all of the other thing that God's trying to get us to understand in all of this, and that's why we need to remember it, because there's just more to it. So the question is it just a done, fulfilled event? What have we said about the Moedim? They're rehearsals. The term, it has a hinting to that. That means there's something that's being practiced here, and that's what was being practiced here. That God was getting ready to betroth and marry his people, and they didn't know it. But he told them how it was going to get done. Then you get to Exodus 12 when the event comes and everything's about to happen. Then the question becomes, who could keep the Passover? There's three different types of people mentioned there who could keep the Passover. Only one person was allowed to do it. You got to look it up in Hebrew because you'll see the foreigner, the sojourner, and the stranger. That's what you'll see in the English. The foreigner is known as a ben nakar. It literally means what it means. It's some dude. I don't know who he is. He don't live here. He's just hanging out with us. He's a foreigner. He's not part of us. The next one is the sojourner, which is known as the toshav. This is someone who is a stranger, but he's not a citizen. So he's coming, but he's like, I don't really want to move in. So I'm just going to hang out, but I'm going to go back home when I get a chance. And then the other person mentioned is the shachar, which is a hired servant. He's just here because you're paying him. That's it. I'm not with you. You guys are going to do that Passover thing. That's cool. I'm going to hang out over here for a little bit. And I'm not interested in doing that because there's a certain cutting that's got to be involved in that. So he's like, I'm just here because you're paying me. I'm not involved. However, the stranger, this is where we get the word the gur, the gur. The goyim, right? The Gentiles. But this word that's used here is the ger. And it basically says the ger who gores. It's how it reads in Hebrew. And what that means is the Gentile who now dwells. This is someone who says, I'm with you. I'm hanging out with you. I got to be circumcised. I'm cool with that. I'll hang out with you guys because all these other gods in the rest of the world, they ain't it. And so I'm hanging out with you people. I'm not here because you're paying me. I'm not here because I'm just passing through. I'm here because I now believe in your God. And that was the person that was allowed to keep the Passover. All right. Who took the children of Israel into the promised land? Was it Moses? It was Joshua. Is this significant? Is there a picture being played here? Yeah, especially if you don't know the Hebrew in it. If you just see that Moses wasn't allowed to go, and we know that Moses couldn't go because he struck the rock. There's some symbolic imagery there that some say that rock, as Paul said in, I forget which book, he said that rock that was going along with the children of Israel in the wilderness was Yeshua. And that when Moses struck that rock, the reason God was so mad because he's like, that's my son, and he's only getting struck once, and you ain't allowed to strike him because of the symbolism there, and that's why he couldn't go. However, I think there's a bit better picture being painted out here with Yehoshua. Joshua. Joshua was the one that took him into the place of promise. Even in the book of Romans chapter 8, it says what the law could not do was done through Christ. He was the one that took us into the place of promise. The law wasn't intended to be the source of deliverance. The law was intended to be how we live, how we conduct ourselves when you get into the place of promise. How you're supposed to act and how you're supposed to treat people and how you're supposed to treat the land and what you should and should not eat and what you should do and not do. So it only had a foreshadow of our conduct. It did not, even though within it, it had the way of deliverance. And we know it was done through the system and all of that. But that in itself was a foreshadow and a picture. And I'm going to hit that pretty hard next week. I'm bringing a message on the blood. It's all about the blood, and we're just going to talk about the blood next week, and that's all we're going to talk about. Okay. All right, now go to Joshua, chapter 3. It says, Joshua rose early in verse 1 in the morning, and they set out from the acacia grove and came to the Jordan. he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they crossed over. And so it was after 3 days that the officers went through the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. They were crossing over. The Hebrew word, where we get the word Hebrew, Ivrit, it comes from the word Avar. It means to cross over. Who was the one that was able to keep the Passover? The stranger who dwells, the Ger who gores, one who crossed over. So when we say that we're no longer of the nations that Ephesians talks about, because we've left the nations and we've crossed over. We're not blood, we're not technically Jews, but we are spiritually Jews. And this is what was happening. This is what was being forced upon the children of Israel after they just spent the last 38 and a half, roughly 40 years, wandering through the wilderness because their parents were disobedient. And now you have to make the same choice, he said. You guys have to follow the ark. You have to cross over. And he even did a very small version of the parting of the Red Sea, because now he's parting the Jordan River. And the priests are getting ready to go after. And what's the ark represent? The presence of the Lord. What are we supposed to be going after? The presence of the Lord. That's why we talk about what we do here is different. We don't want to just become a traditional Orthodox synagogue where all we do is just say the same thing, do the same thing over and over. We want to ebb and flow and move whatever it is that the Spirit of God wants to do, because we're after the presence of the Lord. They were supposed to go and be after the presence of the Lord. All right, Joshua 4. Verse, I think it's 19. Yeah. It says, the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took up out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. So the reference there is when the Lord told, when Joshua went through, I think it was each one of the priests were commanded to, or each one of the leaders of the tribes were commanded to pick up a stone and take it up out of the Jordan. Because they're walking out of the Jordan, they're walking through on dry ground, and they pick up, and I would imagine there were some pretty significant stones. I don't imagine that they were just a couple of rocks. But when did they do it? The 10th day of the first month. He's preparing them. Why? What's coming up? What's happening? Of all the times, of all the months, of all the days of the year, why did he have Joshua and the children of Israel cross over at this time? Why did they have to do it? Was there something significant about this day that they were supposed to remember? Something that they were supposed to keep? Again, remember. So they set up the 12 stones. So they come out of the Jordan, they set up the 12 stones as a monument, as a memorial. Yet again, remember, remember, remember. But then there's another part that people forget in verse 9. It says Joshua took 12 stones and went and set it back in the Jordan. Not the same 12 stones. He took another set of stones and went and set those in the Jordan before it closed back up. People don't really talk about those that much. But you know why? Because the Bible doesn't talk about it that much. There's two things I think that were happening here. One, everybody's going to run into a difficult time in their life. The children of Israel, they got through the promised land. You think about it this way. They get into the promised land after wandering. They were the kids that weren't circumcised, wandering in the wilderness, maybe not fully understanding what we're doing walking around Arabia out here. And we just saw this miracle. And what is the first thing they got staring in their face? Jericho. They got this great big fortress is now in the promised land, and they're going to have to go against that. God ain't even dealt with that yet. So what do the 12 stones do? Just in case you decide to retreat, just in case you think that this isn't a good idea, and it doesn't have to be just because of Jericho, it could be years down the line that somebody starts to head back to the Jordan and go, this Yahweh stuff ain't really worth it. Maybe it's an Elisha, somebody who's just having a dry time and they're not sure. First, they see those 12 stones, because it even says here in Joshua that they were here to this day, right, at the time of the writing of Joshua, that they were still there to this day. So even if you're having a difficult time, you can go on your way back to go back to the way in which you came, and you can see those 12 stones and go, God did something here. He's going to do something for me. He's going to move on this situation. But maybe you're just a little bit stiff-necked. Maybe you're just a little bit weary, and you just keep pressing past that reminder. And maybe it's a dry season in your life. And maybe during a drought, which is a sign of judgment, that those waters dried up again. And maybe as they were getting ready to head back across the Jordan again, they saw those 12 stones. They said, one more time, God's saying, remember, even in the dry times, remember what I did for you. It may be dry now. You may be uncertain now, but remember what I did. I'll get you through this. You will see the rainy seasons. You will see the promised land. You will see the fruit of the land. Just don't go back. Two remembers, don't go back. Don't give up. Don't doubt. That's the message, one of the messages that's being portrayed right here. Even in the dry times, when the drought comes, don't go back. I'm going to fill this back up again, and I'm going to get you through this. Okay? Don't forget that. Remember that. Now this to me is one of the funniest things. They just see this miracle. They just see, after everything that happened, and they come marching through, and they see the Jordan split. And what does God do? Hey, guys, we got to talk. What? You need to be mad at mom and dad, especially dad, because he didn't take care of this on your eighth day. So we got to circumcise you. We're getting ready to have a Passover. It was the 10th day, right? Now, to me, this is funny. Because on the 10th day, after they just got done seeing, so God gives this big miracle, getting them all pumped up, excited, and he's like, I got to cut you. Okay. We'll be all right. Now, what's even funnier to me than that is it says that after they healed, they had the Passover. 3 days later. That's some quick healing. So then they have the Passover. And they celebrate what God has done, and that they now have this thing that which God said to remember, to remember, to remember. Do not forget what I have done. All right. And then what ended after they had the Passover? No more manna, no more quail, no more water. And it says from that point forward, they had to eat in the place of promise. So, boy, I would like to have some of that quail and some of that manna and some of that fresh rock, fresh water from that rock. Why? You like eating cursed food? You're like, what are you talking about? God provided it. Yeah, he provided it because they were in the place of disobedience. That's why he had to feed them. They weren't supposed to be in the wilderness, remember? It says it was an 11-day journey. They were supposed to go straight to the promised land, and they were supposed to start having that stuff in there. So now it's over. I don't want that stuff anymore. I did a message, I think it was last year ago. I don't want no more matzah. We don't want to live about those things. We want to remember the deliverance, but then walk into the place of promise. Eat the figs, and all, not the leeks, right? The stuff that's the other fish and all that stuff that they mentioned when they were complaining about wandering through the wilderness. We want to get to the place of the promised land. I'll never forget when I was on that trip to Israel in 2011, and Randy Fields was sitting in the seat in front of me. And as soon as we passed out of the West Bank back into Israel's land, he just said, oh my word, do you see that? And the land was instantly green. So we left the barren place that was controlled by the Jordanians, not the Palestinians, no such thing. But the land that God, that's God's land that had his people in it, was flourishing and being blessed. Because there is something tied to that. There's nothing you can do about it. It's one of the other reasons why I believe in God. Why I believe in Yahweh. Because he brought his people back in the land that Mark Twain said was barren. It was a most desolate, forsaken land, has come alive when God put his people back in it. And even the parts that don't have his people in it, God's like, I'm not blessing that part. You can go to the other side and you can see, even because it's not Israel land, on the other side of the Jordan, that's not part of, it is, if you get into the Abraham covenant, but if you get into the part that Joshua and them settled, that side's flourishing, but the part that is Israel's only flourishes where his people are at. So they get in there, and now they're supposed to eat only of the place of promise. But guess what? It wasn't just going to pop up out of the ground. They still had to work the ground. Remember, God said to a guy named Adam, you're to tend and work the garden. He didn't work the garden. He didn't take care of the garden. A snake got in. And so now when they get into the place of promise, they're supposed to eat those things at work. And this is the part that too many people in the church world need to have forgotten and they need to remember. This ain't free. You know, what do you mean? You just said it was free. It's what you should. No, no. You're supposed to work after the thing that God gave you. Work out your salvation, he said. You're supposed, there is going to be a struggle. Just because God delivered us doesn't mean the curse that was given to Adam is now gone away with. That somehow you can just go, well, I don't need to tend a garden. I'll just go to Kroger. Okay, well, guess what? Somebody had to tend a garden somewhere to get that. So this is an aspect that I really wish that many in the church world would grab today. We joke and I make light of the circumcision aspect and intending the garden. But because we want a free ride, because we want to be on a cruise ship and not a working boat, we just expect that we just kind of say this thing about Yeshua. We just make this salvation confession, and then we go, well, everything's going to be easy. I don't have to work for anything. God's going to provide manna. Again, that's not the promise. The promise was the stuff in the land. The land will produce for you, but there was also conditions to it. They still had to walk after the Torah. They still had to keep what God said to keep. So it's, you know, sometimes you got to get cut. Sometimes things are going to be hard, and it's okay. Don't fret about it. And we wanted to walk away from that. We often had this idea that if you're going through a tough time, people are like, ooh, what'd you do? You know, I bet you money I could find some either one, some good Hebrew roots people. I say good. And probably some traditional church people that probably have comments to make about the little tornado that came through here. Well, you know, if they was really serving God, that tornado wouldn't have came across them. Well, you know why that tornado came across them is because they'd be getting all mixed up in that Jewish stuff. God's trying to get them out of that law. Guarantee you could have both sides of the argument there. One person going, well, they're not Jewish enough, or vice versa. So when the storm came, did Yeshua rebuke God or the storm? And you know what? And sometimes storms happen. But you know what? You're going to have people that are going to try and find something wrong with what you're doing. It's just going to happen. Okay. So let's say you do get cut. You know what this reminds you of? If you're cutting the flesh, the word for flesh there is the word basar. It's the same word used in the book of Isaiah that talks about how beautiful are feet of those who carry the basar, good news. Flesh and basar is the same word in Hebrew. So anytime that you have a difficulty in the flesh, you can say, I got the good news though. I'm going to get healed from this. I'm going to get delivered from this. I'm going to get set free from this, right? He came up. He got out of the ground. I'm going to get delivered, and I'm going to be set free. So flesh, bad. Good news, good. Just remember, there's a synonym being used there. That I guess it'd be more of an antonym, wouldn't it? It'd be the opposite, but even though it kind of means the same thing. The fact that I just remembered those words is a miracle in of itself. All right. Now, to Joshua 5 and verse 9. We can read this one verse, we can have this one event here, and just have a Holy Ghost run away. We can start shouting, but it gets even better. So he says, then the Lord said to Joshua, this day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore the name of this place is called Gilgal to this day. So, in English, we can just say, woo! He rolled away the reproach of Egypt. And we can go, hey, I got a mental picture there. The tomb, the stone has been rolled away. And I can be excited about that. And it means exactly that. It means exactly that. It was a foreshadow about what Yahshua did in preparation for Yeshua. All right. So what happened here? A guy named Joshua led the people to a place called Gilgal during the time of Passover, celebrated the Passover, and it says that God rolled away the reproach of Egypt. Again, was it an accident that it happened on this day? Maybe, just maybe, God knew what he was doing. Maybe, just maybe, God had a plan. You could stop right there, and anytime you have something in your life, something that you're struggling with, you just need to remember that simple phrase. You don't even have to get into the Hebrew, what we're about to get into here in just a second. God rolled that away. And that's what the image I was trying to get, and this is why I can be a little tough at times. Okay, the stone's open, it's rolled away, and if you're in the bondage of whatever that tomb represents, go out. Just leave. Well, no. I get pity here. I get to feel crucified every day. I get to play the victim every day. Because if I go out there, then I have to take responsibility for my actions. In here, I get to play the victim. In here, I get to feel bad about my situation. This is why I don't do well with a lot of this stuff. I get it. I refer back to the military background all the time. It was so funny. I remember one of the stories. I'm the kind of guy that wants to go, come on, you can do it. Give me 10 more, 10 more. You can make this. You can overcome this. You can do this. But you can't do that in people's emotions. I've had to find that out the hard way. Because I remember one time I was trying to say something, and Casey's like, Steve, she's 5. I was like, quit crying about it. She's 5, Steve. She's not in the military. She's not 20. She's 5. But you know what? They're all pretty tough. They're all pretty strong-willed, you know. So that's all right. Casey was there to balance it out. But too many times, that's why I don't do well with it. I don't do well. I really don't, and I try. I don't do well with the pity train. I really don't when people start feeling sorry about themselves, when they start saying, well, this happened to me when I was 12, and this happened to me when I was 15. Okay, then stay in there. But the door's open. It has been rolled away. This is upon you to walk out. He's not going to grab you by your arm and drag you out. He's not. It's been rolled away. And you can change, and you can be delivered, and you can be set free, and you can be healed of whatever happened. It can be done, but you got to move out. You got to move into the place of promise, not sit inside the tomb and go, well, I want some manna and some fresh water in here, please, because I'm pretty happy being in here. No, because that's not the place of promise. All right. So why at Gilgal? Why Gilgal? Why of this place did we establish something else here that was going to happen? There's an interesting play on words. In 1 Samuel chapter 11, verse 14, a guy named Samuel, which his name means Shema'el, which means hear God. He said when it comes, this time he was referring to Saul, but the statement was made, he said, let's go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom. Why go to Gilgal? Well, maybe it's because there were some stones set up there, and they were supposed to remember where the whole place started when they got into the promised land. But I don't know. Maybe Gilgal has a little bit bigger meaning and something more important than just the place where those stones were set up. So, was it a foreshadow? I talk about parallels and all these allusions all the time. So, is the kingdom to be renewed at Gilgal, or was the kingdom renewed at Gilgal? So he says again, the bondage of Egypt is rolled away. In English, as I just said, it was perfect. But why rolled away? Of all the words that could ever be used, why rolled away? If there wasn't something that God was trying to portray here. Remember, God is the one who said to him, I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt. Remember when we just did the Passover the other night and he talked about the four verbs of why they remember, and he said of the four cups, and one of them is I was going to take you to be my people. Why didn't he say I have taken away the reproach of Egypt today? That would be stronger. That would be more powerful, unless there was something more that God was trying to get across here and something that he was trying to say that was going to happen at a place called Gilgal. How many's already put the English together? As I said, it's more powerful than you think. Where was you? I didn't think I said this. The word for roll, when it says they rolled away the reproach of Egypt, is the Hebrew word galal. Galal. You can say it G-A-L-A-L. Galal. Where was Yeshua from? Galilee. How do you say Galilee in Hebrew? It's not Galilee, it's the Galil. Galil. Guess what the root word is? Galal. So there was somebody who was from the Galilee, which means round, and it comes from the word Galal, who was going to Galal away the reproach of Egypt. You're like, wow, that's cool. Gets even better. Where did they do it again? Where did they have the circumcision in the Passover? Anybody want to guess what's the next word from Gilgal? It's Gilgotha. So when it says when they took Yeshua, the Galilean, the Galal, the Galil, the man from Galil, and they took him to the place of Golgotha, and then you subtract that word back and it goes back to Gilgal. And then you take Gilgal back to its root and it's Galal. So they took the Galil, the Galilean, took him to the place of Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. Most of your versions say the place of a skull. There's one tradition out there, that, and some have said it's the place of Gordon's tomb because it kind of looks like a skull. But there's one tradition out there that says the place of Gilgal and Golgotha, the reason it's called the place of the skull is because that's where Adam was buried. Because you say, well, no, that was east in Eden. No, it says the man was formed and he was placed east in the Garden of Eden. He wasn't made in Eden. He was probably formed in the place where God put his name. And so what did he do? He took that man from the Galil and took him to that place of the skull, and now you have the second Adam dying at the place where the first Adam was. Again, Galil, Galal, Gilgal, Golgotha. It's not an accident. The kingdom was renewed at Golgotha. It was purposeful. It was designed. And now what do? This is why we joke. This is why we get sarcastic when it comes to things like Easter and all this other stuff and go, you are being robbed. You are having stole from you the picture and the promise that God laid out for 1,500 years, 2,000 years if you go back to Genesis and say, this is what he said he was going to do on this day. And Joshua coming in on this day, doing this to the people on this day, delivering them this day, rolling away, all of it was foreshadowing what was supposed to happen. And now we need to remember the Exodus, Joshua, everything, Genesis 15, Genesis 22. Oh, I even forgot to mention Genesis 50. I preached the sermon on the when Joseph said that God will surely visit you, the whole thing about the Pekah. Right? That's another foreshadow, another picture. And Yeshua said you didn't recognize the time of your Pekah, the time of your visitation. All of this stuff is sown throughout the Scriptures. It is something to be excited about. I got one more. It gets even better than this. You remember when it says that Yeshua was on the cross and they cried out to him and they said, he trusted in the Lord, let him deliver him. They were quoting Psalms 22, correct? Psalms 22, a lot of things happened at the foot of the cross right there. But they were quoting that verse. The word trust or trusted is in the Scriptures 129 times. Of the 129 times, something like 114 of them, it's just two words that are used. The primary words that are used for trust. There's one time, one word is translated as trust. One time. And it's the word Galal. That's the only time in all of the Bible that the Hebrew word Galal is translated as trusted. Why? The Messiah's suffering song. And it says that he rolled this away onto the Lord. That's how it would literally translate. When it says he trusted in the Lord, he rolled this away on top. And it even shows the hidden Hebrew word and the hidden meaning. And all of this is painted in there. And you want to try and convince me that this stuff ain't real? You want to know why it's important to remember the Passover? You want to know why it's important to get into Hebrew roots? You want to know why it's important to study the language? This is why. It makes so much more strength and so much more power in what we believe. It's the scarlet thread. Pastor Scott's got a book about it. It's all throughout the Scriptures. And if you want to get into the red heifer and all the different sacrifices and all the different things that happens on the feast, he painted this whole thing through all of it. Now, why? There are people. It baffles me. I had to type all this out because there's so much in here. Okay, there is a movement out there that this day that says all of this was made up, that the entire Bible was fiction, that the whole story was fake. They said it was written around 160 BC. That means that the people that wrote this, and this primarily, the first time I ever heard about this was from the book of Daniel. I heard that there were people who said the book of Daniel was written around the time of Maccabees because there's no way the prophetic events in Daniel could be true. There's no way unless, I don't know, God wrote it, unless God dictated it to Daniel, then it could be true. But because all the liberal scholars go, well, no way, it's too accurate in the timeline and history. However, if we say that it was made up, well, then it would make more sense to our logical minds. But no, they take it further. That not only Daniel, they say that the Septuagint was, the Greek translation of the Bible, was not translated in around the 160s to 200 period. It was created. And that they took the history of the world and the Jewish people wrote themselves backwards into history. Okay, here's what makes this even so much more crazy to me. That means the people that began to write this, they themselves wrote in the scarlet thread. Now, again, what if I said they wrote it in 160? What does that mean? So they wrote in Genesis 15, Genesis 22, Genesis 28, because Jacob Ladders talked about that, Genesis 50 about Joseph. Again, Yeshua quoted in Luke 19. That means they wrote in Isaiah 7 and 9, where it says the manner in which this Messiah would come. Isaiah 53, why and the purpose that he came. Psalm 22, the manner and how in which he was going to die. They wrote all of this in. And somehow, they had to trust that somebody would see this story, because they wrote it in, quote-unquote, 160 to 200. They wrote it. Didn't get a revelation from God. They created this fictitious story about the Jewish people. Yet somehow, they believe now some people saw this thread and go, oh, well, we need to create the narrative. So we need to invent this messianic figure that's spoken of, this one that's hidden throughout all the scriptures, the one in the book of Daniel, which actually gives us the timeline. That's why this 160 to 200 is important, because Daniel 9 says that sometime after the rebuilding of the temple, before its destruction, a Messiah would come. So then they went, ooh, not only did we see this hidden thread written by the secularist, we found it in the right time frame before the temple was destroyed or right thereafter, and now what we need to do is create a narrative and create these gospels and, oh, look at Gilgal and look at Yeshua and look at the meaning and the hidden names, and now we've got these four gospels with these four fake people. Oh, what are we going to do now? We got all these historians that are going, hey, did you guys hear about all these Christians that believe this Jesus guy rose from the dead? Well, yeah, we just created that whole story. Come on. Come on. The amount of faith that it would take to believe that a story was created and then it was picked up on. When I was having this debate with somebody about it, I said, great. I said, okay, let's say your argument's true. They made up the story. Well, guess what? God used them. Because 200 years later, he came, right, and proved the story to be true. So I'll give you your fake argument. Either way, you lose, because he came. So they created this narrative. No, they didn't. We know what happened. You need to be encouraged today, because the world is coming against what we believe, and it's never going to stop. The closer we get to the end, this is going to be ratcheted up in a mighty way. And now you have a lot of people that are quote-unquote smart people, a lot of doctors, and because they throw doctor in front of their name, they can sit here and teach, or because they got some cool website, or they found some similarities between some ancient text, they can now go, well, see, this whole Christian story thing is fake. Again, why do we say things against bringing in some of the pagan traditions into the church? Because it diminishes what God did. It hides the story and diminishes the significance of the feast. Amen? Amen. You guys need to be excited about this. You need to be encouraged because it's everywhere. Everything that we believe is not faith. It really isn't. When you begin to see all of the stuff. So if this revelation, I don't even know what people do with Israel today. I mean, to me, that's the biggest miracle of God, that these people who didn't exist, that didn't have a nation, that didn't have a language for almost 2,000 years, and somehow they just accidentally, through force, became the nation again? Come on, man. It's terrible. It's unfortunate. Let's close with some worship, because I want us to be excited today, okay? I want us to have a Holy Ghost runaway. I want us to have a time where we're just celebrating what was done, celebrating what God has done, celebrating that we have been privileged to see this stuff, that God is revealing in our day these things that were hidden. Just like Paul talked about in the book of Ephesians chapter 3, where he's talked about the one new man and how in past generations it wasn't made known to them, but now in that generation it is. And now in this generation in which we live, we are privileged to see the birth of His people, bringing them back from around the world, and now God is starting to reveal all of these things that a lot of people just took for faith. And it's just undeniable. It's just everywhere. It's just everywhere throughout the Old Testament, everywhere throughout the Tanakh, that all of this in this story, and this is just one of those. I hope that you're as excited about this little story in Joshua as I am. Because we should be on fire more than any other people. And we don't need to be people of fear. We really have to put that to bed. It doesn't matter what's happening to our nation. It doesn't matter what the crazy QAnon people, the Trump people, the Biden people, and anybody else. You know, as a matter of fact, I'm going to use a Biden quote here. All of this stuff, you want me to believe all of this stuff was fabricated? Come on, man. I mean, we just got to quote the president. There's no way, right? But don't be afraid. This stuff is true. And I'm telling you, you might get cut. You might get killed. We have people dying every single day around the world for what we believe. And we have more evidence than they had. All they had, that may sound bad. They had somebody come witness to them, and they felt in the Spirit. And the only thing that they had, when I say only, I didn't mean to diminish that, but the only thing they had was the testimony of somebody in an unctioning of the Spirit of God. And they don't have a fraction of the evidence that you have and what you see. And we've allowed the enemy to come in and steal these things and get us afraid and forget that, you know what, the third day's coming. Amen?
Amen.
All right, whenever you guys are